The Book of Three by Lloyd Alexander, read by Jack Skoda, Randolph, Vermont, 2024. Chapters 13 and 14. Chapter 13, The Hidden Valley. The impact of the heavy, furry body caught Terran fully in the chest and sent him tumbling. As he fell, he caught a glimpse of Fluder. The bard, too, had been borne to earth under the paws of another wolf. Delonwy still stood, though a third animal crouched in front of her. Terran's hand flew to his sword. The gray wolf seized his arm. The animal's teeth, however, did not sink into his flesh, but held him in an unshakable grip. At the end of the ravine, a huge robed figure suddenly appeared. Melingar stood behind him. The man raised his arm and spoke a command. Immediately, the wolf holding Terran relaxed his jaw and drew away, as obediently as a dog. The man strode toward Terran, who scrambled to his feet. "You have saved our lives," Terran began. "We are grateful." The man spoke again to the wolves, and the animals crowded around him, whining and wagging their tails. He was a strange-looking figure, broad and muscular, with the vigor of an ancient but sturdy tree. His white hair reached below his shoulders, and his beard hung to his waist. Around his forehead he wore a narrow band of gold, set with a single blue jewel. "From these creatures," he said in a deep voice that was stern but not unkind, "your lives were never in danger. But you must leave this place. It is not an abode for the race of men."
"We were lost," Terran said. "We had been following our horse."
"Melingar!"
The man turned a pair of keen gray eyes on Terran. Under his deep brow, they sparkled like a frost in the valley.
"Melingar brought me, four of you. I understand young Gurki was alone. But by all means, then, if you are friends of Melingar..." "It is Melingar, isn't it?"
She looks so much like her mother.
"She looks so much like her mother, and there are so many, I cannot always keep track of the names."
"I know who you are," cried Terran. "You are Medwin."
"Am I now?"
the man answered, with a smile that furrowed his face.
"Yes, I have been called Medwin, but how should you know that?"
"I am Terran of Cair Dalbyn. Gwydion, Prince of Dawn, was my companion, and he spoke of you before his death. He was journeying to Cair Dathil, as we are now. I never hoped to find you."
"You were quite right," Medwin answered. "You could not have found me. Only the animals know my valley. Melingar led you here, Terran, you say, of Cair Dalbyn?"
He put an enormous hand to his forehead.
"Let me see. Yes, there are visitors from Cair Dalbyn, I'm sure."
Terran's heart leapt.
"Henwen," he cried.
Medwin gave him a puzzled glance.
"Were you seeking her? Now that is curious. No, she is not here."
"But I had thought..."
"We will speak of Henwen later," said Medwin. "Your friend is badly injured, you know. Come. I shall do what I can for him."
He motioned for them to follow. The wolves padded silently behind Terran, Elanwy, and the bard, where Melingar waited at the end of the ravine. Medwin lifted Gurki from the saddle, as if the creature weighed no more than a squirrel. Gurki lay quietly in Medwin's arms. The group descended a narrow footpath. Medwin strode ahead, as slowly and powerfully as if a tree were walking. The old man's feet were bare, but the sharp stones and pebbles did not trouble him. The path turned abruptly, and then turned again. Medwin passed through a cut in a bare shoulder of the cliff, and the next thing Terran knew, they suddenly emerged into a green, sunlit valley. Mountains, seemingly impassable, rose on all sides. Here the air was gentler, without the tooth of the wind. The grass spread rich and tender before him, set among
Tall hemlocks were low white cottages, not unlike those of Caer Dalbyn. At the sight of them, Taran felt a pang of homesickness. Against the face of the slope behind the cottages, he saw what appeared at first to be rows of moss-covered tree trunks. As he looked, to his surprise, they seemed more like the weathered, worn ribs and timbers of a long ship. The earth covered them almost entirely. Grass and meadow flowers had sprung up to obliterate them further and make them part of the mountain itself.
"I must say the old fellow's well tucked away here," whispered Fluter. "I could never have found the path in, and I doubt I could find the path out."
Taran nodded. The valley was the most beautiful he had ever seen. Cattle grazed peacefully in the meadow. Near the hemlocks, a small lake caught the sky and sparkled blue and white. The bright plumage of birds flashed among the trees. Even as he stepped across the lush green of the turf, Taran felt exhaustion drain from his aching body.
"There's a fawn!" Ilanwe cried with delight.
From behind the cottages, a speckled, long-legged fawn appeared, sniffed the air, then trotted quickly toward Medwin. The graceful creature paid no attention to the wolves, but frisked gaily at the old man's side. The animal drew shyly away from the strangers, but her curiosity got the better of her, and soon she was nuzzling Elanwy's hand.
"I've never seen a fawn this close," said the girl. "Artrin never had any pets, none that would stay with her, at any rate. I can't blame them at all. This one is lovely. It'll make you feel all tingly, as if you were touching the wind."
Medwin, motioning for them to wait, carried Gurgi into the largest of the cottages. The wolves sat on their haunches and watched the travelers through slanted eyes. Taran unsaddled Melengar, who began cropping the tender grass. Half a dozen chickens clucked and pecked around a neat white henhouse. The rooster raised his head to show a notched comb.
"Those are Dalbyn's chickens," cried Taran. "They must be. There's the brown hen, the white. I'd know that comb anywhere."
He hurried over and clucked at them. The chickens, more interesting in eating, paid little attention. Medwin reappeared in the doorway. He carried an enormous wicker basket laden with jugs of milk, with cheese, honeycombs, and fruits that, in the lowlands, would not be in season for another month.
"I shall look after your friend directly," he said. "Meanwhile, I thought you might enjoy. Oh, yes. You found them, have you?"
he said, noticing Taran with the chickens.
"Those are my visitors from Caer Dalbyn. There should be a swarm of bees, too, about somewhere."
"They flew away," Taran said, "the same day Henwen ran off."
"Then I imagine they came straight here," Medwin said. "The chickens were petrified with fright. I could make no sense at all out of them. Oh, they settled down quickly enough, but of course by that time they had forgotten why they flew off in the first place. You know how chickens are, imagining the world coming to an end one moment, then pecking corn the next. They shall all fly back when they're ready, have no fear. Though it's unfortunate Dalbyn and Cole should be put out in the matter of eggs." "I would ask you inside," Medwin continued, "but the disorder at the moment, there were bears at breakfast, and you can imagine the state of things. So I must ask you to attend to yourselves. If you would rest there in straw in the byre, it should not be too uncomfortable for you."
The travelers lost no time helping themselves to Medwin's provisions, or in finding the byre. The sweet scent of hay filled the low-ceilinged building. They scooped out nests in the straw, uncovering one of Medwin's breakfast guests, curled up and fast asleep. Fluter, at first uneasy, was finally convinced the bear had no appetite for bards, and soon began snoring. Ilanwe dropped off to sleep in the middle of one of her sentences. Taran had no desire to rest. Medwin's valley had refreshed him more than a night's slumber. He left the byre and strolled across the meadow. At the far side of the lake, otters had built a slide and were amusing themselves by tumbling down it. At Taran's approach, they stopped for a moment, raised their heads to look at him as though sorry he was unable to join them, and returned to their game. A fish broke the water in a twinkle of silver scales. The ripples widened until the last of them lapped gently at the shore. Medwin, Terran saw, had gardens of both flowers and vegetables behind the cottage, and to his surprise, Terran found himself yearning to work with Cole in his own vegetable plot. The weeding and hoeing he had so despised at Caer Dalban now seemed, as he thought of his past journey and the journey yet to come, infinitely pleasant. He sat down by the rim of the lake and looked across the hills. With the sun resting above the peaks, the wooden skeleton of the great ship stood out sharply against the mound, which nearly enveloped it. He had little chance to study it, for Medwin appeared, walking deliberately across the field. The fawn trotted beside him. The three wolves followed. With his brown robe and white hair, Medwin looked as broad and solid as a snow-capped mountain.
"Gurk is more comfortable than he was," the ancient man said in his deep voice.
The fawn danced at the lake shore while Medwin ponderously sat down and leaned his huge head toward Terran.
"He will recover well. There's no longer any danger. Not at least while he is here."
"I have thought long of Gurki," Terran said, looking frankly into the old man's gray eyes. He explained then the reason for his journey and the events leading to Gurki's accident.
Medwin listened carefully, head cocked to one side, thoughtful, while Terran recounted Gurki's willingness to sacrifice his own life rather than endanger the others.
"At first I wasn't too fond of him," Terran admitted. "Now I've begun to like him in spite of all his whining and complaining."
"Every living thing deserves our respect," said Medwin, knitting his shaggy brows, "be it humble or proud, ugly or beautiful."
"I wouldn't want to say that about the Gwathaints," Terran answered.
"I feel only sorrow for those unhappy creatures," Medwin said. "Once, long ago, they were as free as other birds, gentle and trusting. In his cunning, Aran lured them to him and brought them under his power. He built the iron cages which are now their prison house and Anvuin. The tortures he inflicted upon the Gwathaints were shameful and unspeakable. Now they serve him out of terror. Thus would he strive to corrupt every animal in Prydain, no less than the race of men. That is one of the reasons I remain in this valley. Here, Aran cannot harm them. Even so, were he to become ruler of this land, I doubt I could help them all. Those who fall into his clutches would be counted fortunate if they perished quickly."
Terran nodded. "I understand more and more why I must warn the Sons of Dawn. As for Gurki, I wonder if it would be safer for him to stay here."
"Safer?" asked Medwin. "Yes, certainly, but you would hurt him grievously were you to turn him away now. Gurgi's misfortune is that he is neither one thing nor the other at the moment. He has lost the wisdom of animals and has not gained the learning of men. Therefore, both shun him. Were he to do something purposeful, it would mean much to him. I doubt he will delay your journey, for he will be able to walk as well as you by tomorrow easily. I urge you to take him. He may even find his own way of serving you. Neither refuse to give help when it is needed." Medwin continued, "Nor refuse to accept it when it is offered. Gwythir, son of Gralald, learned that from a lame ant, you know."
"A lame ant?" Terran shook his head. "Dobbin has taught me much about ants, but nothing of a lame one."
"It is a long history," Medwin said, "and perhaps you will hear all of it another time. For the moment, you need to know that when Kilhuch... Or was that his father? No, it was young Kilhuch. Very well. When young Kilhuch sought the hand of the fair Alwyn, he was given a number of tasks by her father, Ispadaden. He was a great chief,
at the time. What the tasks were does not concern us now, except that they were very nigh impossible, and Kilhuch could not have accomplished them without the aid of his companions. One of the tasks was to gather 9 bushels of flax seed, though there was scarcely that much in all the land. For the sake of his friend, Gwythir, son of Grewald, undertook to do this while he was walking over the hills, wondering how he might accomplish it. He heard a grievous wailing from an anthill. A fire had started around it, and the ants were in danger of their lives. Gwythir, yes, I'm quite sure it was Gwythir, drew his sword and beat out the fire. In gratitude, the ants combed every field until they had collected the 9 bushels. Yet the chief giant, a picky and disagreeable sort, claimed the measure was not complete. 1 flax seed was missing, and must be delivered before nightfall. Gwythir had no idea where he could find another flax seed, but at last, just as the sun had begun to set, hobbled a lame ant carrying a heavy burden. It was a single flax seed, and so the last measure was filled. I have studied the race of men, Medwin continued. I have seen that alone you stand as weak reeds by a lake. But you must learn to help yourselves, that is true. But you must also learn to help one another. Are you not, all of you, lame ants?
Taran was silent. Medwin put his hand into the lake and stirred the water. After a moment, a venerable salmon rippled up. Menwin stroked the jaw of the huge fish. What place is this? Taran finally asked, with a hushed voice. Are you indeed Medwin? You speak of the race of men as if you were not one of them.
This is a place of peace, Medwin said, and therefore not suitable for men, at least not yet. Until it is, I hold this valley for creatures of the forest and the waters. In their mortal danger they come to me, if they have the strength to do so, and in their pain and grief. Do you not believe that animals know grief and pain and fear? The world of men is not easy for them.
Dalbin, said Taran, taught me that when the black waters flooded Prydain ages ago, Nevid, Nav Nevison, built a ship and carried with him 2 of every living creature. The waters drained away, the ship came to rest, no man knows where. But the animals who came safe again into the world remember, and their young have never forgotten. And here, Taran said, pointing toward the hillside, I see a ship far from water. Gwydion called you Medwin, but I ask.
I am Medwin, answered the white-bearded man, for all that my name may concern you. That is not important now. My own concern is for Henwen.
Have you seen nothing of her then?
Medwin shook his head.
What Lord Gwydion said is true. Of all places in Prydain, she would have come here first, especially if she sensed her life in danger. But there has been no sign, no rumor. Yet she would find her way sooner or later, unless...
Taran felt a chill ripple at his heart. Unless she had been killed, he murmured. Do you think that has happened?
I do not know, Medwin answered. Though I fear it may be so.
Chapter 14. The Black Lake. That night, Medwin prepared a feast for the travelers. The disorder left by the breakfasting bears had been cleared away. The cottage was snug and neat, though even smaller than Caer Dalbin. Taran could see that Medwin was indeed unused to entertaining human visitors, for his table was barely long enough to seat them all, and for chairs he had been obliged to make do with benches and milking stools. Medwin sat at the head of the table. The fawn had gone to sleep, but the wolves crouched at his feet and grinned happily. On the back of his chair perched a gigantic golden-plumed eagle, watching every moment with sharp, unblinking eyes. Fluter, though still apprehensive, did not allow his fear to affect his appetite. He ate enough for three, without showing the least sign of becoming full. But when he asked for another portion of venison, Medwin gave him a long chuckle and explained to the amazed Fluter that it was not meat at all, but vegetables prepared according to his own recipe.
"Of course it is," Alonwy told the bard. "You wouldn't expect him to cook his guests, would you? That would be like asking someone to dinner and then roasting him. Really, I think bards are as muddled as assistant pig keepers. Neither one of you seem to think very clearly."
As much as he welcomed food and the chance to rest, Taran was silent throughout the meal, and continued so when he retired to his nest of straw. Until now, he had never imagined Henwen might not be alive. He had spoken again with Medwin, but the old man could give him no assurance. Wakeful, Taran left the byre and stood outside, looking at the sky. In the clear air, the stars were blue-white, closer than he had ever seen them. He tried to turn his thoughts from Henwen. Reaching Caer Dalth was the task he had undertaken, and that in itself would be difficult enough. An owl passed overhead, silent as ashes. The shadow appearing noiselessly behind him was Medwin.
"Not asleep?" Medwin asked. "A restless night is no way to begin a journey."
"It is a journey that I am eager to end," Taran said. "There are times when I fear I shall not see Caer Dalbin again."
"It is not given to men to know the ends of their journeys," Medwin answered. "It may be that you will never return to the places dearest to you, but how can that matter, if what you must do is here and now?"
"I think," said Taran longingly, "that if I knew I were not to see my own home again, I would be happy to stay in this valley."
"Your heart is young and unformed," Medwin said. "Yet, if I read it well, you are of the few I would welcome here. Indeed, you may stay if you choose. Surely you can entrust your task to your friends."
"No," said Taran after a long pause. "I have taken it myself, through my own choice."
"If that is so," answered Medwin, "then you can give it up through your own choice."
From all over the valley, it seemed to Taran that there came voices urging him to remain. The hemlocks whispered of rest and peace. The lake spoke of sunlight lingering in the depths, the joy of otters at their games. He turned away. "No," he said quickly, "my decision was made long before this."
"Then," Medwin answered gently, "so be it."
He put his hand on Taran's brow.
"I grant you all that you will allow me to grant. A night's rest. Sleep well."
Taran remembered nothing of returning to the byre or falling asleep, but he rose in the morning sunlight, refreshed and strengthened. Alonwy and the bard had already finished their breakfast, and Taran was delighted to see that Gurgi had joined them. As Taran approached, Gurgi gave a yelp of joy and turned gleeful somersaults.
"Oh, joy!" he cried. "Gurgi is ready for new walkings and stalkings, oh yes, and new seekings and peekings. Great lords have been kind to happy, jolly Gurgi."
Taran noticed Medwin had not only healed the creature's leg, he had also given him a bath and a good combing. Gurgi looked only half as twiggy and leafy as usual. In addition, as he saddled Melengar, Taran found that Medwin had packed the saddlebag with food and had included warm cloaks for all of them. The old man called the travelers around him and seated himself on the ground.
"The armies of the Horned King are by now a day's march ahead of you," he said. "But if you follow the paths I shall reveal and move quickly, you may regain the time you have lost. It is even possible for you to reach Caer Dalth by a day, perhaps two, before them. However, I warn you,
The mountain ways are not easy. If you prefer, I shall set you on a path towards the Valley of Ystrad once again.
Then we would be following the Horned King, Terran said. There would be less chance of overtaking him, and much danger, too.
Do not think the mountains are not dangerous, Medwin said, though it is danger of a different sort.
A flam thrives on danger, cried the bard. Let it be the mountains or the Horned King's hosts. I fear neither, not to any great extent, he added quickly.
We shall risk the mountains, Terran said.
For once, Alonwi interrupted, you've decided the right thing. The mountains certainly aren't going to throw spears at us, no matter how dangerous they are. I really think you're improving.
Listen carefully, then, Medwin ordered. As he spoke, his hands moved deftly in the soft earth. Before him, molding a tiny model of the hills, which Terran found easier to follow than Fluter's map scratchings. When he finished, and the traveler's gear and weapons were secured on Melengar's back, Medwin led the group from the valley. As closely as Terran observed each step of the way, he knew the path to Medwin's valley would be lost to him as soon as the ancient man left them. In a little while, Medwin stopped. Your path now lies to the north, he said, and here we shall part. And you, Terran of Caradobin, whether you have chosen wisely, you will learn from your own heart. Perhaps we shall meet again, and you will tell me. Until then, farewell.
Before Terran could turn and thank Medwin, the white-bearded man disappeared, as if the hills had swallowed him up, and the travelers stood by themselves on a rocky, windswept plateau.
Well, said Fluter,
hitching up the harp behind him,
I somehow feel that if we meet any more wolves, they'll know we're friends of Medwin.
The first day's march was less difficult than Terran had feared. This time he led the way, for the bard admitted, after a number of harp strings had snapped, that he had not been able to keep all Medwin's directions in his head. They climbed steadily until long after the sun had turned westward, and, though the ground was rough and broken, the path Medwin had indicated lay clearly before them. Mountain streams, whose water ran cold and clear, made winding lines of sparkling silver as they danced down the slopes into the distant valley lands. The air was bracing, yet with a cold edge which made the travelers grateful for the cloaks Medwin had given them. At a long cleft protected from the wind, Terran signaled a halt. They had made excellent progress during the day, far more than he had expected, and he saw no reason to exhaust themselves by forcing a march during the night. Tethering Melengar to one of the stunted trees that grew in the heights, the travelers made camp. Since there was no further danger from the Cauldronborn, and the hosts of the Horned King moved far below and to the west of the group, Terran deemed it safe to build a fire. Medwin's provisions needed no cooking, but the blaze warmed and cheered them. As the night shadows drifted from the peaks, Alanwi lit her golden sphere and set it in the crevice of a faulted rock. Gurgi, who had not uttered a single moan or groan during this part of the journey, perched on a boulder and began scratching himself luxuriously. Although, after Medwin's washing and combing, it was more through habit than anything else. The bard, as lean as ever, despite the huge amount he had eaten, repaired his harp strings.
"You've been carrying that harp ever since I met you," Elanwi said, "and you've never once played it. That's like telling somebody you want to talk to them, and when they get ready to listen, you don't say anything."
"You hardly expect me to go strumming out airs while those cauldron warriors were following us," Fluter said. "Somehow I didn't think it would be appropriate, but a flam is always obliging. So if you'd really care to hear me play," he added, looking both delighted and embarrassed.
He cradled the instrument in one arm
and almost before his fingers touched the strings, a gentle melody, as beautiful as the curve of the harp itself, lifted like a voice singing without words. To Terran's ears, the melody had its own words, weaving a supple thread among the rising notes. Home, home, they sang, and beyond the words themselves, so fleeting he could not quite be sure of them, were the fields and orchards of Caer Dalbyn, the gold afternoons of autumn, and the crisp winter mornings with pink sunlight on the snow. Then the harp fell silent. Fluter sat with his head bent close to the strings, a curious expression on his long face.
"Well, that was a surprise," said the bard at last. "I had planned something a little more lively, the sort of thing my war leader always enjoys, to put us in a bold frame of mind, you understand. The truth of the matter is," he admitted, with a slight tone of discouragement, "I don't really know what's going to come out of it next. My fingers go along, but sometimes I think this harp plays itself." "Perhaps," Fluter continued, "that's why Taliesin thought he was doing me a favor when he gave it to me, because when I went up to the Council of Bards for my examination, I had an old pot one of the minstrels had left behind, and I couldn't do more than plunk out a few chants. However, a flam never looks a gift horse in the mouth, or in this case, I should say harp."
"It was a sad tune," Alonwy said, "but the odd thing about it is you don't mind the sadness. It's like feeling better after you've had a good cry. It made me think of the sea again, though I haven't been there since I was a little girl."
At this, Terran snorted, but Elonwy paid no attention to him.
"The waves break against the cliffs and churn into foam, and farther out, as far as you can see, there are the white crests, the white horses of Lyr, as they're called. But they're really only waves waiting their turn to roll in."
"Strange," said the bard. "Personally, I was thinking of my own castle. It's small and drafty, but I would like to see it again. A person can have enough wandering, you know. It made me think I might even settle down again, trying to be a respectable sort of king."
"Caer Dalbyn is closer to my heart," Terran said. "When I left, I never gave it too much thought, but now I think of it a great deal." Gurgi, who had been listening silently, set up a long howl.
"Yes, yes. Soon great warriors will all be back in their halls, telling their tales with laughings and chaffings. Then it will be the fearful forest again for poor Gurgi, to put down his tender head in snoozings and snorings."
"Gurgi," Terran said, "I promise to bring you to Caer Dalbyn, if I ever get there myself. And if you like it, and Dalbyn agrees, you can stay there as long as you want."
"What joy!" Gurgi cried. "Honest toiling Gurgi extends thanks and best wishes. Oh yes, fond obedient Gurgi will work hard."
"For now, obedient Gurgi, better sleep," Terran advised. "And so should we all. Medwin has put us well on our way, but it can't take much longer. We'll start again at daybreak." During the night, however, a gale rose, and by morning a drenching rain beat into the cleft. Instead of slackening, the wind gained in force and screamed over the rocks. It beat like a fist against the traveler's shelter. They then pried with searching fingers as if to seize and dash them into the valley. They set out, nevertheless, holding their cloaks before their faces. To make matters worse, the path broke off entirely, and sheer cliffs loomed ahead of them. The rain stopped after the travelers had all been soaked to the skin, but now the rocks were slippery and treacherous. Even the sure-footed Melengar stumbled once, and for a breathless moment Terran feared she would be lost. The mountains swung a half-circle around a lake, black and sullen below the threatening clouds. Terran halted on an outcropping of stone and pointed toward the hills at the far side of the lake. "According to what Medwin told us," he said to the bard, "we should make for that notch
all the way over there, but I see no purpose in following the mountains when we can cut almost straight across. The lake shore is flat, at least, while here is getting practically impossible to climb.
Fluter rubbed his pointed nose.
Even counting the time it would take us to go down and to come up again, I think we should save several hours. Yes, I definitely believe it's worth trying.
Medwin didn't say a word about crossing valleys, Elonwy put in.
He didn't say anything about cliffs like these, answered Terran. They seem nothing for him. He's lived here a long time. For us, it's something else again.
If you don't listen to what somebody tells you, Elonwy remarked, it's like putting your fingers in your ears and jumping down a well. For an assistant pig keeper who's done very little traveling, you suddenly know all about it.
Who found the way out of the barrow? Terran retorted. It's decided. We cross the valley.
The descent was laborious, but once they had reached level ground, Terran felt all the more convinced they would save time. Holding Melengar's bridle, he led the group along the narrow shore. The lake reached closely to the base of the hills, obliging Terran to splash through the shallows. The lake, he realized, was not black in reflection of the sky. The water itself was dark, flat, and as grim and heavy as iron. The bottom, too, was as treacherous as the rocks above. Despite his care, Terran lurched and nearly got a ducking. When he turned to warn the others, to his surprise, he saw Gurgi in the water up to his waist and heading toward the center of the lake. Fluter and Elonwy were also splashing farther and farther from land.
"Don't go through the water," Terran called. "Keep to the shore."
"Wish we could," the bard shouted back. "But we're stuck somehow. There's a terribly strong pull."
A moment later, Terran understood what the bard meant. An unexpected swell knocked him off his feet, and even as he put his hands to break his fall, the black lake sucked him down. Beside him, Melengar thrashed her legs and whinnied. The sky spun overhead. He was pulled along like a twig in a torrent. Elonwy shot past him. He tried to regain his footing and catch her, but too late. He skimmed and bobbed over the surface. The far shore would stop them, Terran thought, struggling to keep his head above the waves. A roar filled his ears. The middle of the lake was a whirlpool, clutching and flinging him to the depths. Black water closed over him, and he knew he was drowning.